in the first meeting that we are having after a very, very taxing elections period. And I'm sure you can see some of us are more tucker than we used to be. You know, because we have been outside of our offices, you know, meeting all the people on the ground. Hence, you know, our treatment has changed a little bit, you know, to actually tie to what is happening out there. And a little bit different from what we used to look like when we're sitting in offices all the time. Welcome, members. Welcome, officials from the relevant departments, and all those that are coming from the media that are with us. Welcome to this meeting. And it is a very important meeting because we are really racing against time to attend to certain matters of national importance that we're trying to sort out. And it is going to be a little bit difficult, but I hope that we will manage to navigate and get through to the other side and make sure that what is expected of us, it is done and it happens. Honorable members, we have invited Home Affairs, and also we invited the South African Police Service, and we did invite National Treasury as departments to really come and present to us today on the Border Management Authority bill that is in front of us, and something that I think has been on our lips for the past 7 years or so. And today at least we find ourselves here to try and make some progress on this. And from the Department of Home Affairs, we have the Director General whom Kusedi Aplin is with us here. Then we have got Mr. Elroy Africa, who is the project manager for now. Then we've got Advocate Dion Erasmus, the Chief Director for Legal Services. Then we've got Advocate E.A.D. Sibele Major, the Chief Director for Legal Drafting. We also have Samuel Mandiwana, Parliamentary Liaison Officer. Then we've got Riyad Musa, Deputy Director for Parliament Liaison. Then we also have Moses Malakade. I hope I pronounced it correctly. Deputy Director for Drafting as well. And we have got Ms. Zuxwa Adams, also from Drafting in the Department of Home Affairs. And now from the South African Police Service, we have Lieutenant General E. Mawela, the Division Commissioner Operational Response Service. Then we also have Lieutenant General B. Zuma, the Provincial Manager from Mpumalanga. Then we have Major General E. Chilembe, Section Head Border Coordination. Then we have got Brigadier J. A. van der Walt, the Section Head for Legal Services of SAFS. Then from National Treasury, we have not yet experienced their presence. Maybe we'll be informed accordingly. Just speak to them. And then from the honorable members, we have apologies from Honorable Mason. I think the senior has changed. Then also is Dr. Melder and Honorable Hussein. All of them are portfolio committee members of Home Affairs. Then from the Defense and Military Veterans, apologies from Mr. Mukimel. As we also invited, of course, the portfolio committees on defense and military veterans and the SAPS, international relations and cooperation, justice and correctional services, and then the steering committee on intelligence, steering committee on finance. Then at the moment I can say that from the international relations and cooperation, we have Honorable Darren Bergman and Honorable Masango. And then from the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Correctional Services, we have got Honorable Mwabe, who is also standing in on the Standing Committee on Intelligence. And I've seen Honorable Boy is here. And then also Honorable Yunus Karim is here. And I just need to be informed on other members that are here as well. Yes, and then we have got Parliamentary Legal Advisor who is Suan Isaac. And then also we've got State Law Advisors or Advocate Yolande van Aswegen and Ms. Lisa Naidu. These are the people that are here, and I think my secretariat will assist me with the members that are coming in on other portfolio committees, and then we'll inform as time goes on. Honorable members, today our job, main job, is to receive a briefing from the Department of Home Affairs on the Border Management Authority Bill. To receive the briefing. And then, because this bill has been around for quite a long time, we have actually made arrangements that the Secretary of the Committee send the copy of this bill to SAPS as well as Treasury quite a long time ago, and so that today then they can also come and brief us on how they are going to see themselves fitting in this particular project. So we will also be receiving a briefing from SAPS, and we expected to receive a briefing as well from National Treasury. Today is not a day of debating or discussing the bill. We receive the briefing. And also we have advertised the bill to invite the public to make submissions. And when those submissions come in, is then that the discussions and the debate will then ensue. Today we just get briefed, so that we are able to have the whole process to unfold. Of course, other decisions have been taken to actually try and fast track the process in the form of advertising the bill and inviting those specific representations. Also, we have got Honorable Tebekulu is with us. Coming in on the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence, he's with us here today. And we have got Honorable Stebe. Then we have got Honorable Smith is here. Then I'm not sure whether I should announce Honorable Gumede on intelligence, because he's a direct member of Home Affairs. He's actually the host of this specific meeting today. Thank you very much, even for having taken such a long time. I think I have the pleasure now to invite Home Affairs, the Director General, to actually give us a briefing. I hope that all members that I have received a copy of the briefing from Home Affairs. And if there is anyone that doesn't have a copy, then can just raise a hand so that the secretaries can see what they can do about that. Honorable Eunice?
No, there is a DDG from Treasury on his way. I spoke to him in about half an hour.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
No, thank you very much. There is no problem of documentation, except that I think the presentation of national we don't have, and we just going to create a bit of a problem. Didi, can you proceed?
Honorable Chair and honorable members, we really appreciate the time given to us to take the committee through the BMA bill. We are here to provide an overview of the Border Management Authority Bill of 2016. And the outline will be more looking at the key risks and challenges facing border management in South Africa and the political mandate which was given to the department and principles which were informing the BMA bill and what has been the process to date, and then get a little bit on the overview of the BMA bill. But on that point, we'll be trying not to be in detail as we understand that the members Chair, if you look at this, we start by what is the global border management context. The common security issues worldwide in border control is criminal acts, technical violations, transnational organized crimes, terrorist threats to the integrity of border management. Then we are seeing across the globe, in search of borders, anything with the trafficking of drugs, weapons, contraband, terrorist funding, materials related to weapons of mass destruction, conflict, minerals, wildlife, and people. So we are saying that globalization has heightened the challenges of border management for sovereign states globally. So it's not an issue which is isolated to South Africa. Then one of the challenges which we are facing around that, so Chair, unfortunately there are two slides, so I can go back with this and point it, so I will hope that members are able to see. So we start by saying, what are the sum of border management drivers? I'll start with the migration flows. If you look at that slide, it tells you that in the north, people are more going up, but it's only at that, then the rest are pointing into our direction as South Africa. Hence, we are seeing we are the highest amongst the countries to receive asylum seekers in the country, in Africa. And then we move and say, what is the state of infrastructure in terms of these borders? And then, where are the natural resources at? If you can look at where we've got the gold color. And then, in terms of the disease hotspots, we also point out that in the African context. And then one of the major issues which now we are facing is the issues of piracy areas. So if you look at that in terms of the west and then on the east side as well, but on the north is only one dot. So if you look at that, the risk again points towards our side. So we're saying that in Africa, about half of the increase in the migration stock during 2010 to 2013 was the result of movement of migrants from Northern Africa to the East Africa. So what is our status of the ports in the country? We're saying we are currently having 72 ports of entry, which is very high. And that is divided into 53 in terms of land border, 6 railway, 10 air borders, and non-maritime. But if you look around Lesotho, you can just see that it's like a conflicted area. And then what are the risks? Because the more you have a lot of ports of entry, that is the risk which is high there on your side. But now the next slide is really dealing now with what are we talking about. If you look at the air border, we've got about 1.2 million square kilometer space. And then in land border, that which is covered is about 4,471 kilometers. So that we need to look after as a borderline. And then maritime is 3.924 kilometers. And we are sharing the border with six neighboring countries. And in that, which is a high risk, is that we've got about 35 undesignated border crossing because of the borders which we had prior. When now some in areas, communities are just separated by nothing. So they're just walking between each other because there's no clear borderline. So that's why we are saying these are the issues which we have. And we were saying the strategic gaps along the land borderline and in the air and maritime border environment. Limited, permanent, strategic surveillance. That's what we're talking about. So we are saying that in South Africa, we are really, really vulnerable as far as the border management. Now, if we look at some of the key challenges in our trying to speed at this area, I start with the land. I say over 39 million people, they move through these 72 ports of entry annually. I've already touched the issue of the strength of our land coastal borders. We've got seven transfer conservation parks, mainly in informal border crossing. That's why here we're talking about rhino poaching in the areas where we are vulnerable. Cross-border communities, I've already talked about that. Inadequate border fences. Our borders are very, very, very porous. Trucks can just cross in with what? Patrol roads, strategic gaps in the borderline, wildlife poaching, illegal immigration is an issue for us. Then in terms of the sea, there's extensive maritime jurisdiction. Vessel monitoring system is transponder based. What it means is that if that particular vessel does not have that transponder, it can come into South Africa without it being detected at all, because it is a vessel. You need to have something to monitor that. And if you can think about what is being transported by those vessels coming into our country, what do they take out of our country, because we can monitor them. Large volumes of cargo pass through maritime ports of entry. Illegal fishing, illicit movement of contraband and narcotics. Then in terms of air, there's a limited surveillance capability. In fact, the radars which we have are at a particular level which they can detect those things which are flying at that level. Those who are at a lower level, they just cross by in and out of South Africa without them being detected. And then airspace, and we may have a small street close to the border. If you come close to our borders, there are a lot of these small airstrips, people coming in and coming out. So we ask ourselves and say, after people kill these rhinos, how do they take out these rhino horns? It's because of those small streets which I'm talking about. How the small arms which are coming to our country, how they come, they don't come through our borders in terms of the ports of entry, but they are coming through those vulnerables. So, what has been the history of border management in South Africa? Since 1994, SA made balance strides in demilitarizing and de-rationalizing the management of the country's borders by introducing various capabilities to give effect to border management, though they have never been adequate. The consequence of establishing these various organs of state, e.g. immigration control, customs control, border policy, resulted in the emergence of solar silo approach, because now Home Affairs is working differently to the customs, which is SARS, and then the police and all, because now we're not in an integrated approach to border control, border law enforcement, and border protection. Various structures were subsequently put in place to attempt to coordinate the mandates and actions of these distinct occurs of state in the border environment. As early as 1996, a border affairs committee was established, and then in 1997, National Interdepartmental Structure, and then in 2001, we had a Border Control Operation Coordinating Committee, and then in 2010, we established an Interagency Clearing Forum. But all those structures lack the chief, because they work on the basis of who is who at that particular point. If there is a good relations between police and home affairs, then it will be fine. If tomorrow that relations get sour, then everything is for threat, because it's based on the understanding between the parties. From a 2000 Rajasthan Design Report pointed to the failure of the structures to address the systemic and structural problems of coordination model associated with fragmented border management. It is against this background, Chair, that the Cabinet decided in June 2013 to establish a border management authority in South Africa and the integrated approach. Chair, who is operating them? Currently, we've got about 8,891 state officials from at least five organs of state. Home Affairs, SARS, DAF, which is Agriculture, Police, and Health, are working at the country's 72 ports of entry. One, with different conditions of service and remuneration. Implementing distinct departmental mandates in at least 58 pieces of legislation, with competing priorities and deliverables. It depends. We can work on this, otherwise the priorities for me it is not, and all that. Having dissimilar tools of trade and equipment, with some systems that are not automated, it's in health and in agriculture. Engage in limited sharing of information. Say we're all in one roof, under one roof, but we're not sharing information. We don't know what is happening in one side and the other. But at the same time, we're all dealing about border management. Lack of a single management, command and control structure. One organization might be perfect, the other is not, but at the end, the border management suffers. What has been the consequences now of the above fragmentation I've already talked about? It's non-aligned and often poor border control-related service delivery. Ineffective facilitation of movement of persons and goods. End up with unnecessary delays and costs to the clients. Compromised joint efforts and outcomes resulting from different risk management tools and approaches. One organization, again, can be seen as better and the other not, but collectively we are not better. The ineffective utilization of public resources due to limited information and sharing. Inability to enforce a standard approach in dealing with border law enforcement transgressions. I've already talked about the issues of illicit goods. We know about the levels of corruption which are happening in our border environment. A high volume of illegal goods entering the country. I've already said now corruption and organized crime thriving in a fragmented management environment. An increase of undocumented foreign nationals within the country. And silencing with agencies focusing on their own mandate at the expense of the overall border management of the country. So, well, I've talked about the political mandate. So we have already said this thing has been with us for a long time. As of 10 June 2009, in the State Nation Address, President Zuma stated that the government will start the process of setting up a border management agency in South Africa. Then by 2013, then the cabinet then started to take a decision to establish a border management agency that will include the sitting officers from relevant organs of state. The reason for that was for an integrated approach. not a coordinated approach. And then approved what will be the implementation steps, and then DSA was then designated as the lead department for the PMA. That's why now Chewa is here today. Then in December 2014, the cabinet approved a PMA vision, which I'll touch to a little bit, the key priorities for the transitional period, which is from there up to December or now March 2017, because the intention is that by 1st April 2017, PMA must be established, and then the second will be established by December 2016. Then in the 23rd of September, cabinet endorsed that now the draft PMA bill should be introduced to Parliament. So, Chair, we are here based on the mandate which has been given by the cabinet. What has been the principles now for the PMA? PMA will be outcomes-based focused, balancing facilitation of legitimate trade and travel functions while simultaneously addressing security risks. PMA will be established as a single implementation entity, not multiple as we have, under a single executive authority, in this case the Minister of Home Affairs, constituted as a single accounting authority, established by an enabling act. That's why now we've got a bill, so that it is not a gentleman's ladies agreement, it's based on a legislation. PMA will assume control of all ports of entry and borderline functions. I want to stress that part. It will assume control of all ports of entry and borderline functions. With regard to the ports of entry functions, it will be the immigration control, customs control. We don't mean all the customs, but customs control within the border environment. Human health inspection, biosecurity, inspection of animals, fish and associated foodstuffs and products, inspection of plants and related products, border policing, and full custody for infrastructure at the land, port of interest, and come back to that, was currently to the public works. And with the maritime environment, PMA Coast Guard will be established to patrol up to the extent of the exclusive economic zone. So that's how we differentiate between defense, the Navy, and the border guards. Defense will take beyond the exclusive economic zone, whereas PMA will be operating at that. Then again, with the land border line, PMA border guard will be established to patrol an area of 10 kilometers from the international border. So it means now being started 10 kilometers before the border line. So anything which is happening then will be the responsibility of the border guard. Again, that's how we separated our function with the police and as well as with the defense as far as the border line is concerned. Then the air border environment. The South African National Defense Force, primarily the South African Air Force, will assume that responsibility. So they will still be responsible for the management of the airspace. Then PMA will be established as a command and control organization with complete management authority with all ports of entry and border law enforcement areas. A basket of border law enforcement functions will be shifted or transferred from relevant focus of state to PMA. The PMA will be established on the basis of primarily front-line integration. So what does it say is that when you go now into a border environment, we'll be seeing one organization, not three uniforms, this one says I'm doing this, because we integrated. But as far as the front line, it means PMA is not about a policy-making organization. It's an implementing agent on behalf of the departments. Of border law functions and border assets. The establishment of a national border risk management and targeting center will be key to the function of the PMA. As we know now that a state security agency, yes, is part of the border environment, but the PMA will be given that capacity of having some eyes and ears to deal with the issues of border management. As we know, our risk is associated with that. So BMA will have that national border risk management and target treatment. The BMA will establish its own organizational culture, identity, and conditions of service. Foster a uniform organizational culture and identity, one face, one brand, one uniform, and uniform conditions of service for all staff. Not what is currently happening now. Ongoing learning and professional development, zero tolerance for all forms of corruption and unethical behavior. Employ public servant candidates of high integrity and but to be their things. The BMA will assume operational responsibility for port of entry infrastructure maintenance. I said I will come back to that. Currently, the LMC were operating at a land, sea, and maritime. At a airport, AUKSA is responsible for the infrastructure, so that will remain there. And then with the maritime, it is a TNPA, it still remains there. Then it was public works. So in the land port environment, then BMA will be responsible for that, so that we can make sure that we've got an infrastructure which is conducive for the delivery of the responsibility of the BMA. Therefore, Chair, a new paradigm shift of integrated border management for South Africa. That's what we're talking about. Chair, let's just say, what is the vision now of the BMA? As I've already said, I think what is important here is that it will be an armed border law enforcement organ of state. And then we have a border guard. Currently, it's got about 9,000 public servants, as I said, we move from various departments. It will be implementing over 40 laws. It will be a single command and control authority in the border environment. It will take responsibility for all ports of entry and land and maritime borderlines. That is the summary of the building. So up to date, where we are, as I already touched, what is doing the process of the cabinet, including the socio-economic impact assessment which was submitted. We had 3 and 8 months with the public service bargaining council chamber. As we know that there would be staff members which would be transferred, but after that we will go back into that process. So we have been in NEDLAC, and so I will touch what was the outcome of that with about 7 engagements at NEDLAC level, and then with bilateral meetings between labor and the business. A consultation and input from the Office of State Law Advisor was taken into consideration. And the state law advisor has certified this bill as far as it's complying to constitutional issues. And then, as we said, that now in the outcome of that we have to look at concerns have been addressed, some substantive provisions have been revised, structure and outline of the draft bill has been revised, and there were minor drafting issues have to look at it. And then the cabinet approved policy direction and outcomes remained unchanged even after the process of NEDLAC. So what were the areas now, what were the outcome of the NEDLAC process? So with the NEDLAC process, there were 3 issues which now remained unresolved with the report which was submitted with the parliament. One was the establishment of the authority itself. Labour disagreed that the BMA must be established as a scheduled 3 national public entity in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, since they viewed that as privatization of government. That was the issue. However, saying even if it is established as a government department, that there will be funding. So the issue is not about not establishing it, but the form. And then the business was of the view that it would be too risky to establish the new agency. So government is of the view that all the main substantive concerns raised by labor were addressed in the revised bill. Then there was a matter of the security regime. Both labor and business, because in the bill we're clear in terms of, as I've talked about, issues of unethical behavior. doing ones that the staff should be working in the thing he must fetch it. But the concern of the labor, they indicated to us that no, this is not about the PMA, but the whole concept of acting in government, that it takes too long, and then it might disadvantage at the employees because you get appointed and then you get your vetting certificate after 2 years you are in the job, and what does that mean to the employee concerned? So that is the issue we see that they raise. Then the last issue was about routine exercises. Well, sir, we wanted to empower the border guards with all the risks we have in a border environment, that they can search without a warrant. So the view of business was that this issue of the routine searches can lead to an abuse. So we needed now that they must get a particular process. Then we said, with the risk which is running there, I mean, we know now what is happening in the airports abroad around this terrorist issues. If I'm going to suspect somebody and then still need to go and get something written and all that, by that time, that suspect is gone. So you have to act quickly and yes, with some reasonable. So out of the whole bill, these were the three issues in which were raised in the MEDLAG process, but you submitted the report including that. As I'm saying, other folks here, I will try, if you like, in the interest of time, as well, saying now that the members have got the bill. So it's just to say, how is the bill structured, what many structures do we have, and then now based on that, we are just saying, what is the name now of the authority, and then of the way the bill is tagged, is tagged as a 75 bill. So it means now, because it doesn't have any responsibilities as far as the bill province is going to be operating there. So now, yes, the bill will be processed by the NCOP. And then give what is the long title of the PMA, which it is there in the bill. And then, as I said, what would be the envisaged outcomes of the PMA? The socio-economic development, effective and efficient border law enforcement, legitimate trade and secure travel, prevention of smuggling and trafficking of human beings and goods, prevention of illegal cross-border management, protection of environmental and natural resources, and protection from harmful and infectious diseases, pests and substance. So, this makes up the definitions. Number, when we talk about the border law enforcement functions, what we mean, and then what areas I've explained to say, as far as the land border is at 10 kilometers, and then with regard to the sea, is an exclusive economic zone. And then application of the Act, certain way it will be applicable, and then what are the objects of the Act. I don't want to take time and deal with those. I will just give them each one will be the service of the authority, what we'll be dealing with, and then the functions of the authority. What sense all border law enforcement functions will perform the port of entry within the border law enforcement area, and these functions pertain to, amongst others, agriculture, environmental affairs, immigration, and customs. And now they will be transferred by a proclamation by President in terms of Section 97 of the Constitution to the Minister. And then with the composition of the authority, as I said, we have now the Commissioner and the Border Guard, which will comprise of officers and commissioned officers and support staff. And then we deal with the issues of how will the appointment of the commissioner will be done. So the president will appoint the commissioner, and then the minister, if there is an acting commissioner, minister will deal with what are the terms of office of the commissioner, how the commissioner will be removed in the cases of transgression, and condition and service of the remuneration of the commissioner, how they will be handled, and we do that in particular in consultation with the Minister of Finance. And then what will be the functions of the commissioner, that clear what the commissioner will be dealing with, and the delegations by the minister to the commissioner. now other officials will be appointed, and now that some of the members of the BMA will be categorized as commissioned officers. And then what will be the duties and functions and powers of officers of the guard, which is put clearly the what they will be doing. And we're saying that those officers may also exercise any power confirmed on them as peace officers in terms of Section 241 of the Criminal Procedure Act. In terms of conditions of employment, as we said, and it would be a public entity, however, the staff will be part of the GEPF. And then the limitation of rights of officers. So we dealt with this in terms of is the essential services would be the people allowed in terms of getting to the strike, but never agreed that that would be done through going through the process of essential services commission, and then based on that, then they would be declared as essential services because of where we are operating as a BMA. And then the powers of entrances, essential warrants, and then, sorry, I was talking about that, it was close number 19, powers of entrances and without a warrant. That's why I was saying that the business had an issue with this, in terms of even business routine services and entrances. Powers leading to vessels within maritime borders, what will be doing there, detain or arrest persons and goods, and seize goods, that's what that clause deals with it. How the MA will get funds, so it will only be funded through Parliament and government, and the other monies legally acquired by it. Then the issue of the immovable property, that will be able now to procure that in terms of the ports of entry. And then, Chair, there will be an inter-ministerial committee. The purpose of that is to really act as an oversight committee. As our Chair, we have politically said that that is not is operating on behalf of other departments like your defense, your police, and all that. So we need to have that committee to be able to look at that. Then they will have another board, a technical committee, which that one is at a level of the directors, generals, and the commissioners. The minister at one at any point can appoint an advisory committee for a specific reason, and then there will be implementation protocols. Then out the delegations by the minister and the review or appeal of the decisions of the commission, how will that process was there in terms of the chapter 9. And then Chair, in terms of the determination, appointment, prescription, withdrawal or cancellation of ports, points or place of entry. So I think that the Minister of Home Affairs will have that power to designate a port, and as well as after the renewal can be to say we'll close this port of entry and all that. And then in terms of the reporting, it will be the same in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, that it will report to Parliament in this function. And then exemptions from payment of toll fees, this is normal same with all the law enforcement agencies, they will have that. And then the issues of confidentiality, it was one of the issues which we have to discuss in the bill to make sure that it does not mean that it will really take away the issues of a whistleblower, but at least we need to have a protocol of how to deal with confidentiality issues of the agents. The liability, if it is not a liability, we deal with that, and what would be, it can impose offences and penalties. And in terms of the regulations, yes, it will have to issue regulations, and then when those regulations are issued, they will follow a process which must be clear so that the public must be able to participate and be sure that now the regulations are understood by everyone. And then the terminal test to deal with the transfer of employees from the organs of state to the authorities, as I was saying at the end, we still have to go back to the public service chamber to deal with those issues. What will be interests and liabilities and funds, ports, points and places of interest, as the minister will determine that. And then, yes, unions will be recognized in terms of BMA will also be subjected to those issues. last one is just what would be the short tackle and commencement, as I said, it's a normal process we could follow. Chair, what we are seeing now at the end, what would be the intended benefits of the BMB? Would be the creation of a customer service efficiency through streamlined integrated operations at the ports of entry, a formalized relationship between BMB and relevant organs of state, enhance security and management of the border environment. Improvement in threat information, risk profiling, and mitigation enforcement to create an integrated border environment piece. A focused approach to the optimization of front-of-end operations and processes to enhance efficiencies through maximum compliance and minimum administrative costs and delays. Effective utilization of financial, human, infrastructure and accommodation resources in the implementation of border management functions at the port of entry as an age for multiple border management authorities. Improve sterility and integrity of ports of entry and border law enforcement areas and processes. And improvement in management, discipline and transparency with a single line of sight authority at the point of entry with a larger command and control organizational environment. So with those terms, we are saying with that, that's what we are presenting to the committee and saying this bill seeks to establish a border management authority in an integrated approach in a border environment. Thanks very much, sir, and the members.
Now, thank you very much, DG. And honorable members, so we have received a briefing from the DG from Home Affairs, and this is the official presentation of the BMA bill. And the one who would like to take for granted that honorable members belong to different political parties and now have an opportunity of having the copy of the bill, probably as well as the video, whatever clip from Parliament, and have discussions at the level of the political parties and have some positions on certain issues that need to be debated and discussed at the Italian state. And also the other portfolio committees that we have invited also have that official position how the Department of Home Affairs sees this particular bill. But while we are doing all that, we must remember that we are the policy makers here.
Yeah.
All other people, including the department, they are assisting us to actually get through this and put a policy. We all know that our borders are porous. We all know that Messina, Komati Port, there's lots of problems during holidays, Christmas holidays and the rest. And then we all know that in our streets of our cities, we have got people that we can't identify. They are roaming the street, going up and down in our farms, everywhere. Because the borders around the suit, there's nothing really. You can just walk and find yourself in the suit without knowing that you're already in the suit. And all those things come in the picture. To say South Africa wants us to deal with this issue of foreign border and making sure that we secure the country and also, of course, and secure our national population register. But up to now, it's very difficult. It's very difficult to do all those. So a decision of actually to deal with the borders has been taken long ago. And the processes, as I've said, is almost about 7 years. And people have been asking, what is it that you are doing to ensure that we have got safe borders and the illegal crossing of foreign nationals that are undocumented and the rest. And we have been putting pressure on the department after we realized that the Department of Home Affairs has been mandated to lead in this, to say what is it that's happening. Then they've done some study visits for the models, and they've come up with some sort of framework of the animals that can assist us, and now it is in front of us. Then one would then like that we take the bill as it is, the presentation that Home Affairs has done, and of course we'll take also the presentation that SAPS will do, and the treasury. You go and debate and discuss and see how you can assist us in order to deal with this challenge of the porous border. See how you can assist us to finalize this policy to ensure that we deal with this problem that we have at our ports of entry and the borderline. And thank you very much. I think if there are points of clarity, I will take them just after we have just received the SAPS presentation. I hope that SAPS is ready. And also I hope, because this is one of the presentations that we received a lot more earlier, and I hope all members have got copies of SAPS. And let's hear how SAPS can assist us to achieve this goal. You may proceed, SAPS.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I am Major General David Shalaga of the Component Head of the Position. I'm going to present the SAPS fight on the BNI bill. Chairperson, the DG Home Affairs has summarized the broader perspective of the BMA, and I would like to first say that we as SAPS, we are part and parcel of the establishment process, so we are attending fully all the processes with regards to the development of the Port Management Authority. Chairperson, when I go through the presentation, you'll notice that I'll skip some of the slides because, as you said, it's not the time for discussion. But the briefing that we will give to the House. The presentation of Honourable Chair will be based on two processes. The first one is the summary version of our comments to the entire bill. What we have done is that we have summarized it, and then we have also given a draft reply that looked at the bill point by point, where we as SAPS have been point by point pointing issues on the bill itself. First slide, these are just a table of contents. I'll just jump them. The purpose, as I've mentioned earlier, Chairperson, is to provide the portfolio committee with a brief update on the establishment of the Water Management Authority Bill. The process followed by the PMO, as I've mentioned, that we are part and parcel of the establishment, and the priorities that to date. And then to outline SAPS' proposed position and comments on the published BMA bill. In this outline that we're going to do, we're going to look at the internal discussions that SAPS has gone through and the transparent process that we have followed in looking at the bill itself, and also attempts to show compliance to the cabinet with, in relation to the establishment of the bill. As an introduction, the DG has introduced the process that this issue started in 2009 during the State of the Nation Address, and we are saying in 2013 Cabinet also resolved that DHA to resume the lead agency. But we are also mentioning the fact that since 2009, the process of arriving the lead agency went from department to department. First it was given to SAS, then it was given to RSA, as it is now with the Department of Home Affairs. In terms of history and background, the DG has also mentioned this, is that pre-1994, the border management was exclusionary, race-based border control, controlled by security, and it was sort of like a housing passing border management. However, I would like to mention the fact that pre-1994, SAPS has been in the border environment and has been on agency basis conducting functions of other departments in that environment. It was not police policy on border environment. The current situation, Honorable Chair, that in this slide, we are mentioning the constitutional mandate that mandates the SAPS in the border environment. The first one, we pointing out the issue of the single police service. As I mentioned, that we're not going to get into discussion, but I think it's important for us to raise this issue that the Constitution talks about one police service in terms of Section 199 of the Constitution. And also, in terms of police functioning at the border environment, it's also in term, mentioned in Section 34 of Schedule 6 of the current Constitution, where it says that all sections that were in the previous constitution that were not repealed remain in force. I'll mention that when moving forward, that is the one that specifically talks about policing in the border environment. Then, Honorable Chair, Section 36 of the Police Act also assigned SAPS for the purposes of border control, search, seize, and arrest without a warrant at a reasonable distance in the border environment. But all the sections that I've just mentioned, they are talking about border control in relation to legit movement, but they talk about the illegal movement of people and goods. In other words, talking about the issue of crime in the border environment. The current situation, Chair, is that the SAPS currently have plus or minus 7,000 personnel deployed at all 72 ports of entry. The DD mentioned earlier that it's about 8,000. It's about, for SAPS, it's about 7,000 people. So we're talking about chief police members and the PLA members that are part and parcel of the SAPS. The SAPS functions include specialized functions that can only be performed by SAPS and, in our opinion, cannot be shifted to other departments. This we're talking about the issues of police and investigation of crime. But whatever that we do, SAPS ends up in court. And we are of the opinion that it cannot be shifted. Progress of SAPS to the establishment. Since the previous establishment of BMA, as I mentioned earlier, SAPS has fully participated and has nominated permanent personnel to another attending all the experience that are part and parcel of the BMA establishment. In terms of the police and legal change management, the operating model, the risk management work streams, etc. And also SAPS took part in the international benchmarking process where we engaged with the parliamentary on various issues. The Treasury expenditure performance review that was done by Treasury GTEC and assist on proposed transfer and similar functions. This slide was dealt with by the DG, where he mentioned the progress that not has been updated. This one also talks about the work streams that are currently there, where we are taking part in those work streams. In this one, we're talking about the multi-party agreement, or because we saw that maybe during the transition period, while waiting for the full implementation of the BMA, we need to continue working in order for the environment not to collapse. So our DG has signed the multi-party agreement in order for us to be able to function in the environment. this one is also mentioning the same thing of Gurkipit. And this one is also the DG mentioned it with regards to the transition phase that what is it that we currently busy with. And this, the DG didn't touch on it, but it is part of the BMA process that should the BMA not be able to start from the 1st of April 2017, what are the proposed or functions that can be done. The national approach that will decide on which functions are we going to start with in order to make sure that the BMA succeeds, modality approach, and volumetric risk-based approach. These are part and parcel of the processes that the BMO is busy with. The SAPS comments on the BMA bill. I've mentioned earlier, Jefferson, that there is a specific constitutional mandate that mandates SAPS to conduct crime prevention function or traffic collision at the border environment. This is a section that I've mentioned, section 281J of the interim constitution, the one that was not repealed, in other words, it was then taken over to the current constitution. And the above constitution refers to traffic policing and dealing with transnational crime in the border environment. I think it is important that one should talk about this issue, because when we talk about transnational crime, we're talking about crime that happens between two or more countries. Then it can start inside the country, through the border to the other country. That is the mandate that has been given to the Sarawak Police Service to do the function. Then the proposed function of the BMA in the field refers to legitimate movement of people and goods. That's why earlier I said the constitutional mandate talks about the illegal movement of people and goods, while the bill talks about the legitimate movement of people and goods. That's where the issue is being cleared, that what are the functions of the SAPS in the border. It's not about legitimate movement, but it's about the illegal movement of people and goods. Although there are legitimate movements that will be responsible for example, the issue of import and export firearms that are part of the firearm at the environment. The comments on the bill, as a summary, I'd like to comment as follows, but we have commented more on the draft reply that was submitted to Parliament. We are saying in its current format, the bill may impact on LPS function and give rise to various interpretations. That is why we're saying this is that the bill doesn't outrightly come out or say what are those functions that needs to be performed. In our discussions, mostly we refer to an issue of hippopotamus. You see a hippopotamus in the water, but you only see the nose and the ears, but you don't know how big it is. That's the issue of the interpretation that we're talking about. And we're also saying that the preamble does not mention the constitutional mandate of the SAPS in the border environment, and it fails to mention the fact that the SAPS, the single service, and law enforcement, and SAPS is the primary function, while at the same time acknowledging the similar mandate of the defense. What we are saying is that the bill acknowledges the constitutional mandate of the defense, but it doesn't acknowledge the mandate of the SAPS. Going forward, the bill incorporates, recognizes, and proposes cooperation and coordination with other state organs, whether communities and other persons in border law enforcement functions, but does not mention the SAPS. In this one, Honorable Chair, what we have done in the draft reply, we propose that that clause 5, because it talks about cooperation and coordination. In other words, it says the BMA can still coordinate and cooperate with the SAPS. That's why we agree with it. the bill letter provides the process to be embarked on after arrest and handing over to SAPS, but that does not provide the procedure. The reason why we are mentioning this one is based on the issue of the Abdul Rahim case, where it was found that, or it was mentioned that DHA should designate areas of detention. And SAPS then joined in this case because these people were detained under SAPS, and SAPS should not then say, but they were detained by Home Affairs. We are saying such decisions should follow the prescript of the law and the relevant SAPS standing orders, because if somebody has been detained under SAPS, it needs to the under SAPS detention capacity, it needs to follow that process. Then, Jefferson, while we were discussing the issue of the BMA, we then internally had discussions that what are the possible scenarios that SAPS can be faced with when the decision is taken on the issue of BMA. We came up with three scenarios, scenario A, B, and C. Scenario A, we said the SAPS border official units. We're now talking specifically about border policing members that are assigned at the borders. We're saying that they be considered to form part and parcel of the BMA structures with the appropriate command and control hierarchy and cease to be members of the SAPS. In other words, if these members are seeded into the BMA structures, then they are going to cease to be SAPS members. So you'll only be sending in human resources, but not the powers that you'll need to conduct the procedure. Our observation in this scenario was that these units would be detached permanently from the broader SAPS, but may require certain linkage to the SAPS. In other words, we're trying to put forward the issue that although BMA can be there, you still need linkages to the broader SAPS to deal with the issues of crime. But I think these units may benefit from the focus omnibus budget allocated to the BMA. That's the observation that we're looking at. But however, we're saying SAPS would be, this issue of saying would be tried. We look at it, but it's not really an issue that would be tried because SAPS are part and parcel of government. In scenario B, we're saying in this scenario, the SAPS units operational net borders are funded to the BNA structure for a certain period of time, e.g. a top duty of anything between 3 to 5 years. Then our group would be then funded every time when the top duty ends. Our position on this scenario is in this scenario will allow members who wish to continue with their careers as SAPS members to do so after they have completed their BNA tour of duty. In other words, these are just scenarios that we were dealing with internally, looking at what would be the process that needs to be followed. In scenario C, Jefferson was saying in this scenario, the SAPS operational units and borders remain outside the BMA structures, however, continue to work alongside in cooperation with the authority officers. This is the one that we try to say that although you are going to have a BMA, you still need police to conduct certain functions. That's why I was saying maybe if they are parallel to the BMA structure in order to conduct those functions. Our observation is that the status quo and challenges of prioritization of police stations within SAPS would still remain where in borders are not as much of a priority. This is an internal matter, as I mentioned earlier, that when you have certain function at the border, then it can create a possibility that SAPS may not prioritize them. On the other hand, the BMA may have a focused omnibus budget that caters primarily for all stakeholders under BMA to the exclusion of SAPS. Jefferson, in all the scenarios, in slide number 24, we are saying law enforcement will be as follows, because we're talking about policing and law enforcement. then we were trying here to mention those functions. What are those functions? I think the police of borders, the arresting of people, opening of dockets and circulation, because that is the function of the SBS. Only when somebody has been arrested and handed over to the SBS, it's only the SBS that then takes the process to court. The investigation of transnational crimes, controlled deliveries, follow-ups, and intelligence gathering. Here we are saying the issues that deal with transnational crime at borders doesn't end at the border, but it goes into the country where you have to go deal with issues like controlled deliveries and follow-ups and intelligence gathering. Provision of specialized services, your skippers, your boxwains, deep sea divers, that's the function that the CPS is also doing. Motormen, the crew, aviation drone action teams, your bomb squads, your K-9 units, your profilers, your document analysis, your diplomatic service, and designated firearm officers. The reason why we mention this function is that when you talk about lots of end, when you talk about the issue of airports and seaports, it's different than what you do at the airport. Because at airports, you've got the internal aviation organization that tells the country that, how an international airport should be policed. It's written in their airport. So it's the government, your maritime. In conclusion, Chairman, by saying it is recommended that SAPS consider the following scenario C as a preferred option, as the generality of the provisions in the bill do not exclude the preferred scenario, namely that SAPS continues to function at borders in the manner that it is presently doing. This option will not require any constitutional change, that's what we are saying. But if we believe it as is, we won't require any constitutional amendment. In the current situation, the SAPS enforces all laws. In other words, SAPS can function as an immigration officer, can function as customs, because we are can be able to enforce those laws. Jefferson, I don't want to be biased, but we are of the opinion that the SAPS is the law enforcement vehicle that we need to conduct this fashion. And if that can be then given to SAPS to lead the border management agents. Thank you.
Thank you very much. There is one thing that I've just picked up from your presentation, is that there are a few things that you still need to discuss with Home Affairs. When you go back, then you find time and space, and then to engage with Home Affairs on those things that you have raised, that still needs a little bit of processing. And when you come back and start hearing and discussing and the bill, and then we'd like to hear the outcome on some of these things. And I'm very happy that you have pointed things that you believe if they are attended to, then they can lead to a better policy. Possibly that is what we want from a single government and single cabinet and a single administration. Collaborate and assist each other so that we have a better product. And of course is that I'm sure you are very aware that we cannot change the cabinet decision. We can't change the cabinet decision. And we want to believe that that decision that Home Affairs should lead this, it is based on certain considerations which we don't know, and we think that those that have taken that decision have applied their mind. Like as you have already indicated, that over a period of time, the transitional arrangements of creating the coordination structures for border management, it has moved from one department as a bit to the other, until eventually it has ended with Home Affairs. The reason why that has changed until it rests with Home Affairs, we are not privy to it. But the thing is at the port of entry. If the immigration officer of Home Affairs says you can't go through, everything stops. You may be having legal goods and everything, but if he doesn't comply with to be allowed to cross the border, everything stops. And now, without going a little bit deep on that, just to say that the decision has been taken at a certain level, and we believe that all the ministers at the cabinet level, the Treasury, Minister of Police, and all of them, they were there. And then they agreed that Home Affairs should lead. And then up to now, there's a link to that. And then if there is any source of discussion like changing the lead department, that discussion should then take place somewhere else. Thank you very much. And I really like to thank your presentation to point at things that should be looked at in order to better the bill. And I think that is what we want, and members also, I think, have picked up, and in the discussions in the political parties and committees, and also when we come back, then we'll be having some content to process. Thank you very much. Honorable members, I think Treasury should be stuck somewhere else, unless if they free themselves. If Treasury is ready, they should just come and put their assistance out here, and then so that we can hear. And we hope that also they are going to enhance our process. Can we have maybe some two minutes or so, those that want to stretch their legs, those that want to pick a bottle of water or juice while they are sitting up here? Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think now the mics are back from holidays or from some breakfast. Honorable members, the Treasury has eventually pitched up and they've got their presentation. I'm sure now it's... I know. I mean, at this point. Remember that there is a hand there. I was aware of them there. I'm in here. And that's why we had a break, because they had to actually sort out their presentation on the system. Now they've done that. And honorable members, I think from the Standing Committee on Finance, I'm told that there are extra four members that have joined us. So we have got a good number of them that have actually raised this particular meeting, and we really appreciate that. And from Treasury, we have Ismail Momoyat. I hope I'm not messed up the pronunciation. It's perfect. He's a DDG on tax policy and financial regulations. Then we have got George Shembo on public finance. And then we have got the MP from school. On legislation. Then we've got the officials from SARS that are present, Mike Kalatos. Oh, I can only pronounce Afrikaans names. Kosilo, I know that one. Then Mpomashaba and Mark van den Broek. They are all here, and they are going to take us through their view of the BMA as they've seen it. Because also, as I said in the beginning, that we did try and send the bill after it has been tabled in Parliament to the Department and seek their view. Of course, with the purpose of improving the bill. And we hope that they will assist us to do so and also empower us as we proceed with the discussions on the bill. And you may proceed.
Thank you, Chair, for inviting us. You've outlined our delegation. I think we do feel this is a very important topic, and thank you for inviting National Treasury. We took the liberty of just asking our SARS colleagues just to be present to support us, but this is a Treasury presentation. But having said that, I should say that certainly there's been a close working between the Treasury and the South African Revenue Services. And there are times when I do point out that it's not just a Treasury position, but certainly a SARS position as well. So, Chair, I think, like you've said, and just to make clear, Treasury and SARS certainly support the objectives of the bill. I think if one goes to the memorandum of objects of the bill, I think paragraph 1.1 with all the bullet points, I think outlines this pretty clearly. You know, we support the need for integrated and coordinated border management that facilitates secure travel and legitimate trade. We believe that the objective is critical for the function of the economy and for economic growth. If we ever have a situation where this movement is impeded or is too slow, it impacts on, as we've seen, on tourist industry, impacts on businesses, the export and import. So this is quite a critical area that we must look at, and also just look at the economic perspective. I think for us, certainly the key question is how do we achieve the objective, and to make clear, how can we achieve it without risking or fragmenting the existing tax system? And that's an important point that certainly even our cabinet in approving the bill was quite focused on, that between two departments, ministries, that gets taken into account. So we support the integrated and coordinated operational approach. Now, you know, I'm getting on dangerous grounds because I'm certainly no border management or customs expert. But certainly, I know that it involves many players, and it should operate, I think, just looking at it from the outside, as an integrated, seamless operation for its users, be they tourists, be they business people, be they businesses importing or exporting containers. And we know that there's at least 21 players, and I'm not going to go through that bullet because I think my colleague on my right, DG Mplenyi, and his delegation would certainly be familiar with that. And I guess the key question is how best do we ensure a better integrated and coordinated approach to operations related to border management. Borders are critical to deal with the flow of people, which primarily Home Affairs has been looking at, and the flow of goods, which SARS has been primarily responsible for. Notice I use the word primarily, there are other players. But I should also point out that there are other things that sort of somehow also across country, they go from our country to other countries, or from other countries to our country, and that don't have to go to any border post or border line, namely services, the movement of capital. These can just be electronic transfers, and certainly when customs, for example, looks at its work, it's got to, one of the big challenges is how to tax online purchase of goods and services. Chair, just so the House can feel comforted, you know, we have been having quite a, you know, we're always having engaged each other. It started as this process was on, but certainly currently we are focusing on the operational implications to ensure not lead to unintended consequences and fragmentation of tax administration and collection. And you know, at the cost of repeating that point, I think that's an important point for us to look at. I think, Chair, the BMA book, if you look at it, it obviously, the objective is to aim the Border Management Authority. And it's a framework though, so it doesn't spell out, and should not be expected to spell out, it doesn't spell out what functions or resources are to be transferred. It provides the framework and the end vision. And I think in our discussions, we certainly accept that this is something. Sorry, apologies, I know that this is a bit of this in-time production, so the presentation is being circulated if you haven't got it already. We in our discussions certainly accept that it's going to take a number of years to implement, and that there's a phased approach. You know, once the bill comes into effect, it's not that suddenly whole lots of functions are transferred, these will be done in a considered and step-by-step sort of manner. So the details are not spelled out in the bill. Some of all the detailed info is, however, out in various studies. Certainly there's a study done by GTEC for Home Affairs, and I want to point out such studies, although the GTEC reports to the Treasury, it's not a Treasury view. Whatever work they do, they offer technical support. There's a socioeconomic impact assessment that deals with some of the underlying operational issues. There's also a tax committee report by the Davis Tax Committee. And certainly I think all these reports make some important points, and it's quite important that we just take note of some of these documents, or that the hearings take note of them. Because the worst thing would be that we proceed and don't take into account key issues, key risks that have been spelled out. The bill, as I said, with all bills, therefore, because it doesn't deal with the issues, it doesn't, for example, and as I said, shouldn't, say which staff from which department will be moved to the BMA, what assets or what liabilities will be moved between departments and or from departments or entities to the BMA. What is the budget of the BMA? And Treasury, as you add, has not received the specific details. We've received lots of documents, but we're not able at this stage to talk about what the implementation plan, in implementing it, what it will cost, what's the budget, and especially that given that it's phased, obviously the budget will change. And as the bill, I think, or some of the documents would outline, generally there's a principle that function, funds follow functions when they get transferred. So a lot of that is premised on that. And obviously, I just want to make the point. So in coming here to make the presentation, we're not coming from the budget perspective. The budget office always, even when cabinet makes a decision, people still have to go through the budget process. So everything is subject to your budget being approved in a sense. It's an implicit sort of principle that stands. And, you know, the budget office will come in once those details are spelled out. Obviously, there will be many of the departments or entities that move will have to give up their budgets. These things can be quite messy. People often, you know, we have to play out to make sure what the funds actually are. And obviously, there's also a range of PFMA type approvals that are required. That's also not being dealt with, and that will come as more detailed information and on implementation then comes through. So we cannot at this stage assess this cost. And I want to give an example, Chair, because, you know, we human beings, we are human beings, okay? We're not like you're just moving a scanner from one department to the other. When you move human beings and you harmonize the conditions of service, this happened, for example, when we're looking at the proposal on rates, these regional electricity distributors. That in our system, it's almost as if, I don't know how highly paid my colleagues from South are, but I imagine they get paid a bit more than public servants like some of us. And some of these are public servants. So as you move, let's say, some South officials, people from other departments, you equalize conditions of service. If it's very hard to prevent salaries from going up. So without any additional delivery, before you get to the hard issues, your salary bill could go up. So that's a big challenge for any such establishment of an agency which takes people from existing arrangements. Aside from the fact that there's hard issues, some are in GPS, some are not. Now, I know the law would say, you know, people can kind of generally opt for wherever the conditions are, but those are really hard issues and often involve, I guess, negotiations with unions and so on. So it's something we just have to be mindful of. So today's focus, therefore, is not on the budget, not from the PFMA perspective. It is only from the tax policy and revenue framework. Yes, revenue is off the side of the budget, people often forget, but that's the only side that we're focusing on in this presentation. We will have views coming from the other units in the Treasury when those details are available. Now, tax admin, Tax policy and tax administration, just to make an obvious point, is done by the Treasury and SARS under the Minister of Finance. The Treasury is primarily responsible for policy, and SARS is primarily responsible for collection and tax administration. However, we have to work pretty closely together, because there's a current saying that in developing countries, certainly, you know, tax admin is almost a form of tax policy. And if you don't take into account the capacity of your administration, you're not going to collect money that you think you do, because if people can find ways around it, they will not pay. So you better have the enforcement and the collecting mechanisms in place. The Constitution also authorizes that only the Minister of Finance, whoever you call the Minister of Finance, in effect, can introduce a money bill. And if you look at the customs or excise duty, they are just another form of tax. It's just kind of specific words for a different type of tax or levy. And these can only be imposed in terms of a money bill. You'll see in a moment, I'll just point out that we split bills because the Constitution is very clear. The money bills must only deal in substance with any taxes, duties, levies that are imposed and any appropriation of money. If there's any detail on the administration, it really needs to be in another bill, except for minor issues can be part of the money bill. So certainly SARS requires pretty detailed legislation often to go with any tax, which, you know, it's easy to say thou shalt pay, you know, 41% income tax. It's much harder than to legislate and to say exactly what's covered in the tax rates, exactly, although that's part of the tax bill, of the money bill, but how it will be collected, who has what power, whatever powers the commissioner has, and so on. So, to make an obvious point, tax bill, revenue collection is one of the most essential elements of any sovereign state. And certainly it's at the core, I would argue, of nation building, that people pay their taxes. And certainly, if government didn't have that revenue, many of us would not be in this room because we either wouldn't be employed or the state would be unable to fulfill those functions. Tax administration and collection are governed by the Tax Administration Act of 2011. And in fact, just take us back. One of the first decisions in 1994 of our democratic government, at that time it was new, it's no longer so new, was to establish a tax commission, which was done at the time by the Minister of Finance, first Minister of Finance, if you remember, it was Gavin Keys, no, it wasn't Trevor Mandel, and in his first budget, in June 1994, he announced this tax commission to be chaired by Michael Katz, and the first and most urgent report of the tax commission was to establish SARS as a separate entity from the then Department of Finance, the old Swiss Department of State Expenditure. Inland Revenue and Customs and Excise Units within, so you had Inland Revenue and you had the Customs and Excise Commission, right? And they were separate. And these were merged because there were clear synergies between them. And the SARS Act was then arising from that report, passed in 1997, and SARS was immediately established on the 1st October 1997. So customs and excise are forms of taxes, and really, when we say taxes, we include them. And the SARS, one of the key reforms was that they operate as a unified customs, excise, and tax service. Just to focus then on the tax and revenue framework, as I said, tax admin is tax policy. I've said this, I won't repeat this. And the key thing about having, if the more you split these things, if you split tax admin from tax collection, you find that the scope to avoid and evade taxes is massive. Okay, the best lawyers are employed to find gaps. That's why I think members of the Standing Committee on Finance will tell you that every year we torture them with the Tax Laws Amendment Bill in the TALA, which is not the Taliban, but the Tax Laws Administration Bill. And various other bills, but that's like the core bills that deal with gory detail, okay? And if any members have sleeping problems, they just have to read that at night and it will solve that problem. So you cannot split these things, and therefore you find that these set of bills, so annually we always have a money bill, but with it is a non-money bill, which is a Section 75 bill, which deals with Edmund. But these are really one bill. The Constitution, we tried to address this and amend the Constitution to treat this as one bill, but we still have to split it. But the parliamentary committee that look at it like SCOF and Select Committee, they treat it as one process. So both bills come as one. We publish them together. They are hearings are together because you can't read the one without the other. And well, I've made the point that only the Minister of Finance is allowed to table such bill. Okay, I'm not going to go into too much detail. And we can get to the customs issues, but certainly, and I want Charles to talk through this at some point, but just to show you that over the last 20 years, focusing and improving administration, both in other taxes, customs, has been a key focus. Some of the numbers are mind-boggling. You know, there's 40 million pieces of paper, I presume it's per year. It used to be. They moved the system from manual to electronic. This, you know, real-time processing that they need to look at. The number of days to import goods has halved. There's better risk controls. And importantly, if you look at in South Africa, we collect about 100... In 1995, we only collected... Our total budget was 113.8 billion and 16 billion was collected by customs and excise. In the last financial year, we collected just over a trillion, okay? That's 1,000 billion. And 300 billion was customs and excise. So it's a significant part of our revenue. It's about 50%. In World Bank Logistics Performance Index, South Africa ranks pretty highly, at number 18 from out of its collection, okay. So this used to be number 42, and if, under SARS, they really improved this. I think, yeah, just to point out, there's a strong linkage, if there are still any questions, between tax and customs, okay. And custom collects multiple revenue streams. It also collects import VAT. So you can't separate customs, excise sometimes, and import VAT. There's an issue of figuring out what the values are. Obviously, there's a lot of trade mispricing. We've been dealing with the problem of illicit flows. The customs official has to be able to know and assess the value and see what to inspect, because they can't inspect every container or every bit of luggage. Then there'll be massive delays. So it's an art to say, I don't know what percentage they check, but they only check a certain percentage. But they got to know, they do a risk analysis and so on. One of the key reforms that are currently being done, and I should say this, you know, again, I hope nobody would ask me the questions, but, you know, they give effect to all kinds of revised Kyoto Convention, and then importantly, in 2014, we passed new customs laws, a set of three laws, the Customs Control Act, Customs Duty Act, and Excise Amendment Act. There's still a fourth one, which is the Excise Duty Bill that needs to go through. But to this day, SARS has been, it's been enacted into law, signed by the President, so it's law, but it only takes effect after we are ready for it. And this has been a massive modernization program that, SARS could come with this sort of presentation. So there's a lot of preparation work being done. And I think the concern is that in moving towards the BMA, we hope that this process will not be disturbed or made more difficult. There's a lot of consultations that have to take place with people commenting, particularly businesses. So how do you deal with this? These are issues that certainly need to be taken into account. We work closely with other departments like trade and industry, with ITEC, etc., lots of agencies that are involved behind the scenes. think here it's quite important that the BMA take into account the Data Tax Committee and other recommendations. And this is the point of the engagement that we're having. It's important that, and I don't know if members have seen this report, we would certainly make it available to you if you have not, but the Data Tax Committee was set up, so following on the Tax Commission, Judge Davis was the deputy chair, after Michael Katz was an ordinary member, okay, but he now chairs this committee, comes with a lot of experience, and he recommended the powers of SARD and BMA be kept separate. BMA not to be assigned current powers of SARD with regard to revenue collection and control of goods. There shouldn't be a comma between revenue and collection. Okay. The DTC recommends that, and to quote it, that the BMA should focus on other issues that ports of entry like illegal immigration and human trafficking than the customs function. That's what they mean. Okay. Now, this is their view. Government certainly doesn't say Davis Tax Committee has set this, therefore its policy is wrong. Government applies its mind to it and decides whether it thinks it's correct and so on. So it's quite important that we do this, because I think the risk is when the bill is silent on how it will impact on SARS, it generates a lot of uncertainty on SARS. That's why the point of engagement that we have with Home Affairs is to say, we do need certainty. How is it going to apply to SARS? It's got to be in the legislation. It can't be done like as a framework and then suddenly one day it applies and people are forced to move or certain functions broken. That will be very disruptive. It will lead to huge tax avoidance if we don't watch it. And it goes away from the Tax Commission recommendations. There is a deviation. I'm not saying that there is. So one just needs to know there's some very solid issues. I think for us also, we believe that the socioeconomic study does make some critical points, and they should be taken into account as we strengthen the bill. Indeed, you know, there could be a very easy way to deal with the Davis Tax Committee recommendations, which is under Clause 2.3, which excludes the Defense Force, just to take the Customs and Excise Act and the Tax Administration out. That would certainly generate the type of certainty that we would want. I think just to make the point, on tax legislation, we find that, as I said, annually, we have to deal with tax avoidance. So every year, we put measures to try and catch the scallions who know how to get around things. Okay, they've got very clever lawyers. So what we have to do is, we have what's this called, as I said, the TALA bill, which is currently before the committee as well, the Standing Committee on Finance, which kind of continually deals with it. We feel that to extend that SARS is going to be affected, it's better to do it in that bill, because these things won't stop just once. You're going to find that there's going to be lots of changes. So yeah, I think I'm going to move very fast now and just say that as far as Treasury and SARS have been looking at it, is we feel an integrated approach needs to be unpacked. What do we mean by it? Certainly it should mean that there's an integrated operations and seamless operations at our borders. It may mean that systems must talk to each other, but does it mean that you have to absorb everyone into one entity? You do need one entity. Many should go into that entity. But you may well find, I think, like the Defense Force and so on, that some agencies actually may, you know, one needs to ask for every agency, should they be incorporated completely or should they still be kept separate, and does one focus on coordination? And just to give an example, when you look at the embassy, I mean, you know, it's one thing to say that when you come through Oatambo or Cape Town internationally, that there are customs officials after immigration and you kind of need to harmonize that. It's quite a different operation when you go to the other side of Oatambo, where mainly it's not people, but it's commercial cargo, or it's, what's it, City D. You know, that how do you handle those containers? You know, what do you deal with and at what point? I think those are critical issues. I'll just try to spell out for members, I believe that SARS feels very strongly, and they will come here and demonstrate that aside from what people people like us who are in ivory towers, say like in the department or in the Davis Tax Committee, the people on the ground say revenue and custom operational value chain must remain intact, and any break in this chain will introduce significant risk. They are very happy to come and be interrogated on that and to talk about it. I will not go into it. If there are questions, OSAR's colleagues could answer those. And I think just to make the point for members, the issue of coordination is obviously not new. I think the DG of Planning did in his presentation outline all the various committees that they have been, and they continue to be there. I think the issue is now to obviously legislate and formalize this type of coordination and make it mandatory, and we don't have a problem at all with making it mandatory. We can deal with structured border coordination, get into the border detail. Obviously the bill, and if you look at it, because we think that on voluntary coordination there may be issues, but what's the options? I think some of the studies actually do look at the options, and there are options that we should certainly look at. We give an example of mandatory coordination in the statute, which exists, right, currently. Let me conclude by just giving you what the National Treasury's views on the border management. So, as I've said, it's a framework that spells out the vision. Because it's spent on detail on how, there is a question of some things you don't want to legislate for because they may be better to do through regulations, or as we develop, we'll figure out what needs to be done. But I think we're very clear that when there's key decisions to be made, it's quite important that certainly all the other relevant ministers are probably consulted as concurrent. In fact, it's not just after consultation. So if there is any function that's shifted from SAR, certainly the minister and the commissioner need to give their approval at the time. The bill should be clear, as I said, whether it applies to SARs or not, or what activities it will affect or not. Not providing details creates uncertainty, not just for SARs, but for customs administration. Any legislative changes, we believe, to SARs should be done through the annual tax bills. The shift of functions of staff at some point in the future, as I said, must be with the concurrence of the minister and commissioner. Otherwise, we really risk almost undermining an institution which I think worldwide is seen to be a success, and certainly one of the great successes under our democracy. I want to just assure members that we are having a deep consultation process. We are friends, we are not fighting. There are reasonable people can have different approaches on these things, and so we are engaging on the book, and we do hope to come, DG of Planning, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Our bosses may need to meet, and just point out, this large areas of agreement. Department of Home Affairs, as I said, they have no intention to do revenue collection. They recognize it's the sole responsibility of SARS. BMA, we all agree on information sharing. The system should be talking to each other, and it needs to be an integrated approach. Okay. Sometimes, it's not something we can just say that it needs to be the same system. Sometimes, I don't know, you need ID specialists and so on to figure out what systems are better on, or, whether it's one system, many systems, how they talk, something that I certainly don't know about. It is we're still engaging on seeking clarity to clarify the revenue collection role of SARs in the BMA law. As I've said, we need certainty. Integration of institutions, but we're talking specifically of SARs, versus the integration of systems and operating platforms, which we agree needs to be integrated. Whether it is necessary to transfer any staff from SARS and the impact of any staff transfers on the integrity of the revenue and customs value chain. I think those are areas we are still engaging on, and which we hope to finalize in shortly. So as a way forward, certainly, as I said, we're continuing with, just to be clear, we clearly support Australia and SARS, the integrated and coordinated approach, which is based on mandatory coordination, so we don't have a problem that is legislated. But incidence of SARS, we don't believe that should involve institutional intubation or fragmentation of SARS or taxi administration. That's a road we should not go down. It would be introducing unnecessary risk. We need to take into account various reports that are there. The consultation process is ongoing and we hope to conclude it shortly. And the BMA will, well, I've said this many times, so it must provide certainty. And certainly on the other issues of what's the budget and who's giving up what money, that's a separate process, and those would be able to obviously either look at the approvals and subject to the laws for change, etc., once we get the actual operational details that come through. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you very much. Even though that mainly you have stuck to the customs and exercise and the SARS motion, but I think that empowers us to really look at those areas. And we will use the presentation as we have received it, and members would use it when we engage moving forward. But you need to have meaningful discussions with Home Affairs, and you are experts in the relevant departments, and together committed to see this thing going through, you will be able to make provisions that really produce what we want. You should be able, if you are committed, should be able to agree on certain provisions that will assist us to move forward. And of course, there may be a need to balance some of these things. There may be a need to balance some of these things. The security of the state and the assurance to collect maximum tax as well. And these things sometimes they will need to be balanced. At certain times, certain things also enjoy priority. But as time moves forward, certain things also comes out. Just wanted to reiterate that our people are seriously complaining about our porous borders and the risks and loopholes that exist at our ports of entry due to officials that are reporting to different managers with different mandates and consciousness of their mandates at the port of entry, and things create real problems at our port of entry. Then the question, of course, is what we then do. As I'm saying, is that since 2009, approximately we have got 7 years now with this BMA thing. 7 years. And we're not supposed really by now to be having things that are problematic and has not been engaged and resolved by now. But one would really like to say that some sort of a meaningful engagement within the next week or a week and a half, and then we have some sort of consensus on things that must happen to achieve a balanced objective for us to be able to really implement the decisions that have been taken to say, look at our borders and our ports of entry. There are things that are happening that are threatening the security of the state. And now we are on that particular project to do. I really hope that those issues that have been raised by SARS and those issues that are raised by National Treasury, please find time and space and engage all those things and give us consensus. You see, if the executive, at the level of an executive, they agree on the view, then at the level of the administrators, then there are a few things that they believe that they're not agreeing on. And then they throw them to us and want us to mediate on them. It may be a little bit unfair, but you know, we are really well placed to mediate if everything has failed for you to agree. Then we are available to do that. But ordinarily, we would like that the cabinet ministers, when they agree on a bill to come here, that means they have satisfied themselves that this framework is acceptable and it will assist in achieving a particular objective of the state. And then it's expected of the administrators then to make sure that what they've agreed on see the light of the day. The administrators, they must assist us that that decision sees the light of the day. And that is what I'm just requesting, that when we come back, then some of the few points of that looks like we have not reached consensus up to now, and then half of them should have reached consensus. And during the process towards the end, all of them then we should have reached consensus and make sure that we are able to respond to this national call to deal with our porous borders. Honorable members, the intention is that the security cluster, we would have liked to work with the security cluster on the bill because it actually touches all, whether it's intelligence, even if it may not be mentioned here, international relations, all that. The thing is that we would work together on this particular bill because it is actually cutting across. But we are aware as well that doing that, it may actually stall everything that you are doing in your own committees. It may stall everything. And of course as well is cutting across all departments as well. We would like that at certain times that SARS should be, not SARS treasure, will be present. But I know I've been in treasury, I've been in the Portfolio Committee on Finance, and I know the workload that is in that committee continues almost every day, then there is something to be done. If you don't do it, then it's a backlog in finance. I don't know how we're going to be assisted, but we will need that assistance. And moving forward, because would like all other committees that are affected by this particular bill to be present to assist us, not the whole committee, because otherwise, that is, as I've said, it would actually stop all the work that we are doing. And then, and that is not our intention. And the whole the management of the presence of portfolio committees in our meetings, and the for now let me just simply open the floor now, honorable members, for possible points of clarity. We will provide ourselves with an opportunity to discuss and debate the points, and I think it is coming on the 13th of September, and I think on the 8th of September, then the invitation for submissions will close on the 8th, and then I will be having all the documents and the views of the public and interested parties, and also of course is that the other departments that are not here. If there was any other few things to raise as well, then we'll be having the whole bunch of papers now to actually process and go through them. And as I've tried to indicate, is that the intention is to assist the process that we produce a piece of legislation
that is accommodative. It may not be excellent to one particular views of a particular department or a particular entity, but we must have a consensus on the thing that we can work on and respond to this challenge of our ports of entry and our borders. Any points of clarity, starting from the EG of Home Affairs and staffs as well as what the Treasurer has raised? Maybe me? Let me then just go start side one, then it is two, then three is Mekene, four Aputi, five Masango, and then six Gumede, and seven Karim, and you eight. Thank you very much. Can we start in that fashion? But not, please don't get tempted into discussing the thing, debating it. Points of clarity, where you need the presenters to clarify what they've actually said, and whether you've heard them properly or whatever, and then we'll have an opportunity for the debates and the discussions on the 13th. Thank you very much. You may proceed.
No, thank you, Chair. I'm not sure whether your comments are going to limit me to what I wanted to say, but I hope I don't go outside the framework you have outlined. I want to welcome the presentations as made, but I have a few comments that I want to make, especially from the presentation from the SAPS and what National Treasury has just said. Maybe just taking the discussion back, I think the reason why we are introducing the BMA bill is for us to deal with what is currently called DCOCC at the border, something like that, the Border Coordinating Committee, where you have various departments coming in, but we think they are toothless. Now we want them to have a leg to stand on and assist in this regard, which is a good move. But what worries me more is how the DDG from Treasury and the presentation by SAPS, where the role clarifications are not well spelled out, but also where the SAPS paints scenario 1, 2, 3, and you are not sure whether police will automatically fall under the SAPS or they would then become something else and so on and so on. You know, those kind of uncertainties which Momo talked about, to say this bill is more of a framework bill, and once you start to say that, everybody will hide behind these gray areas and say, and not be able to act because there are no clarifications on certain things, which becomes a problem to me. All of us say, and I can hear your desperation, that you want our borders to be controlled accordingly, that there must not be this free movement of people and goods without proper documentation and all other things. But that also have elements of fundamentals that we have to take care of. The biggest thing that also contributes to our SARS revenue is what we get at the borders. And we can't undermine that. And that's why as a committee we have been pushing for scanners, which are now getting into, are being deployed in the area. There's one element that I also want to share with the committee. You see, when goods arrive at the port, one of the things you also have to do, and I think SARS is doing it, is put a seal on the truck, and they'll be saying, or maybe let me give the Bay Bridge experience. They would say these goods are going to Mozambique. And the next SARS must trace and check that truck to say, did it go through the border of South Africa? And did it go through the border of Maputo to go into Mozambique? And most of those goods end up in South Africa. And that's where you find some of this illicit trading and all other things happening. So, and that's where then SARS must come handy to assist in making sure that everybody is nailed accordingly. Same applies to people. If me and you go to India or to any, or to the US, immediately when we arrive, you are registered, they know the hotel where you are going, you even tell them in 2 days and you are they are able to take you to say, now you have left the country. And that's where we want to go, and that's what BMA probably want to. But we cannot rush some of these things without clarifying some of those things, because they will be very critical. Even if we want to deal with the border issues, there are other things that must not be compromised, because while we want some of those porosities to be dealt with, we also want revenue, because we may deal with one and not deal with the other, and we'll come back to square one. We'll not have money to pay personnel, including those people who are mailing the borders. So we have to see how we balance some of these things and making sure that things happen. So a week or whatever, that I'm not sure whether it's a time frame for all of us to deal with, but I think even the Davis Tax Commission must be included and engaged in some of the things, because it's a commission that was appointed by government to assist us in dealing with some of these things. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I'm not sure, but you have just put spanners into the works instead of asking a point of clarification. I really just want to beg members, let's ask a point of clarification. If there is anything that these three presenters have presented and you have not heard properly, or you think it is not clear to you, you heard them but it's not clear, so that then they clarify, so that when you go out here, we go being very clear what is the intention of this BMA bill. Then we can go and process it in all our corners and take particular positions, whether in other committees or in our political parties or whatever. We do so. The questions that are still sticky, I have requested and said that this bill is long that it has been around. It's long that it has been around. Last year, September, it was out of the draft. And we're supposed to process it somewhere around January, February. Then we put brace on it because of the network situation until then it reached this time around May when it was released here. Now I'm saying the administrators in the departments that are actually affected, ordinarily they should have dealt with this thing at their level of administrators. But it looks like there are certain sticky points. Then we are still saying to them, go back and have consensus on some of these things. Go back, have some consensus. On the 13th, when we come and start this, we must hear progress on some of those points, so that we are able to be able to finalize or process the legislation. Because if you have got sticky points that you are not committed in resolving,
and agreeing as administration, then you put us in trouble. Because now we have to actually think for you and think and actually finalize a particular position. When we finalize, then you say, oh, this is bad for us. Whereas you can actually negotiate with each other what is the best way out on this particular matter. You know, I just did not want to stop stuff on the scenarios, because that is actually a debate that is somewhere there forward. We're going to take the decision, the bill provide for the officials to be transferred or not. If then they are transferred, then now must work out on all those mechanisms, whatever. I think that needs to be worked out. Whether transfers of infrastructure, transfers of staff or budget and all those kind of things. So all what one is saying is that let the officials go and review these things that they think they are not in one on the bill as it stands now. And on the same things, then you must have some sort of a response. Be committed in resolving these things and have consensus. Don't stay in a corner and say, this is my corner, I'm defending this, whether come rain or not, this is I'm defending. No. Be committed and speak to each other and have an amicable consensus on a particular point. I mean, you can write some other paragraphs here in this bill to provide for the things you are agreeing to actually make sure that you are happy about these particular things we're talking about. And then we'll have now an opportunity as members of Parliament then to come and look at the things that you've agreed, and then there is a bill that's initiated, and if we agree with you, then we pass the thing. If we still think that there are things that we must, as politicians, as a custodian of policy making, then we'll also pick here and there. But at least from the administrators, should be working together and make sure that we bring something that it has got some reasonable consensus. Can I move to number two?
Thank you, Jay. I have a couple of questions of clarification. It appears to me that the root problem which we're trying to deal with in respect of efficient border management is a coordination crisis between the different agencies responsible for border management. And so it raises the question about whether the most efficient solution is not to legislate for more efficient coordination between the various agencies responsible for border management, rather than legislating to establish a new organ of state which is likely to be very expensive and a huge burden on the already stretched fiscus. So that's the first question of clarification. Why not legislate to improve coordination between the different agencies responsible for border management? The second is question of clarification is, your presentation appears to me to be silent on the question of intelligence. Is it your intention that the Border Management Authority establish its own intelligence gathering function? And if so, could you share the particulars with us? Third, your personnel numbers, which you estimate in the presentation would be approximately 9,000. I wonder if you could provide us with a breakdown, because in my view, they can't possibly be correct. The SAPS has already estimated that approximately 7,000 members are involved in border management. In the SANDF, assuming that there are 15 subunits deployed currently, which I think they are on the border, that's in itself, using the organizing concept, about 6,500 personnel. So your numbers, in my view, are clearly incorrect. Fourthly, I wonder if you could brief us on what you anticipate in respect of procurement. Because to illustrate part of the madness of this bill, let's have a look at the maritime environment. The bill establishes a new border management safe Coast Guard to presumably police 1.5 million square kilometers of ocean. Now the question is, what assets do you have at your disposal, assuming that the South African Navy are responsible for functions outside the EEZ? The only assets that you have at your disposal that I'm aware of would be the three inoperable vessels in the Department of Agriculture and Fisheries and a couple of other ducks operated by the SATs. The effect of that means that you're going to have to embark on a massive procurement program for additional vessels, which is going to cost a fortune. When the taxpayer has already forked out billions of rands for four South African Navy frigates. Again, when it comes to the air border environment, you envisage the South African National Defence Force being responsible for the air surveillance. The question is, with what assets? The South African Air Force currently has limited or no capacity for maritime surveillance, which means, again, a huge procurement program. So have you considered the implications for procurement and what are the possible cost implications? Finally, Chair, it's clear from the presentation that the executive branch does not have all the wasps in the jar. The SAPS supports the bill as long as they lead it. National Treasury also supports the bill as long as SARS are not part of it. And so my recommendation would be that your committee should seriously consider requesting the minister to withdraw the bill, resolve these issues, and bring the bill back to Parliament.
Yeah, it's a little bit difficult from my side, and I think you raised about 2 points, I think, of clarity, but others, you are really debating the bill. And it makes it a bit difficult for me. And I thought that members are going to help me to really get over this and come back and raise all these questions that need to be answered. Not clarified, answered. There is time for those questions. You see, I really just request to be held on that. And I don't think I can really clarify this I'm trying to provide for members. It's 4 points of clarity. Another point.
The chair was just saying that the chair mustn't elaborate, must just give us other members to give those points of clarity. So respect, Andrew, chair, please. Because I'm still on the queue for point of clarity. I thank you.
Yeah, proceed. You'll be followed by Mekin.
Yeah. No, I just thank you very much, all who have presented. I just wanted to check with the police, especially on the slide 18, where they were mentioning the issue of on the Abdul Rahim scenario, on the issue of the SAPS and the immigration officer. So I just wanted to check that the role of the SAPS and the immigration officer, especially when you cited that Abdul Rahim scenario. And I think, DG, when looking at the porousness of the African map, you know, you have given us a porous map, especially on the north side. The projection of the 9,000 public servant, I think it's still not sufficient. We still need more, especially when we did our oversight in the Northern Cape, whereby we found that there were some shortage, a cross shortage of staff there. So, in my view, 9,000 is still not sufficient. So if when you come back, if you can give proper estimate with the background, you know, with the breakdown. On the issue of vetting, I think it should be a prerequisite, because you can see the mammoth task in relation to this BMA, especially with people with those who are going to occupy high position. The vetting should not be in when a person has already been employed, but it should be a process whereby when a person is applying for the position, the vetting must be a prerequisite. I really don't know how are you going to do the vetting issue. And the career path, I think, why when you speak about the career path as if it's a mammoth task, because especially with the police, you view this kind of the career path there is a challenge. I don't think it's a challenge because I think part of working, it's a learning. You are in a learning environment, so there's no a challenge in it. I think I'll just have to stop from there.
Yeah, let me hope that the Honorable K will improve on this particular matter. Yes.
Can you tell us? I don't know whether I'm going to improve or what, but I'm just going to try. But sometimes we are tempted because we need to ask questions sometimes, because really, as much as you talk about the clarities, but at the same time, the question, you need to ask the question that can be corrected when we come back in September. So that's why I realized I don't know what I'm going to do if they want to say thank you to the person for that. Thank you for the presentations. I think I love it more on the Home Affairs presentation. On the issue of challenges facing daily in South Africa, and we say that it's unmanaged, poorly managed sometimes, as we say it's porous. It's not clear to me what are the specific functions of a border guard in relation to asylum seekers. We sometimes change the status to refugees when they want to be the merit of visiting their country for their asylum seekers. What will happen therefore in the issue of changing the status to refugees from asylum seekers? On the principles informing the bill, it was an issue of land borderline. I'm worried, I have a concern on the rail borders. Yes, you understand, there are six of them. Also on this issue, the reason why I'm worried, because when we went to Nagop on our oversight, we noticed that you talk about 10 kilometers. Now it's not clear to me how do you measure these 10 kilometers, because when you, from Namibia to South Africa, you see that there's a railway that goes far away from the land borderline. Now I'm asking myself, what will be the position in those rail borders? Because really, I don't understand whether there will be another border guard there, or else there's another one in the land borderline, and then on that rail also, looking at these things we're talking about. And then also, it's not clear to me, once the BMA is established, what will happen to the current immigration branch on Department of Home Affairs. Fourthly, noting the five organs of state mentioned having different conditions of services remuneration, what authority will BMA have over these departments in case of border environment, in times of dispute and overlapping roles? Because the roads will really overlap, to my understanding, because there are different departments. And lastly, what about the treatment with NEDLAC? It's not quite clear what you intend to do so as to convince NEDLAC before we will discuss the spill in September. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, and Dr. Sang.
Yeah, thank you, sir. I think we need to welcome the engagement and discussion on the bill with some of the imperfections that we observe around consultation between and among entities and departments. I think we'll be getting there. If I were to make a recommendation on this one, would be that there must be a tightened discussion, as the chair initially currently indicated, that entities and departments must actually say, here are the sticky areas about which we don't agree, and here are the package of areas about which we agree, and or whether the authorities in the persons of ministers would have made interventions to resolve the sticky areas.
I do have three distinct questions. For instance, the bill says that this agent or this authority will be an armed authority. What will be the levels of arming? Would there be a need for retraining the members? And will there be a need for the retraining the members? Somewhere talked about the demilitarization of border security since 1994 and whether this is actually a remilitarization. But I do agree that there might be some kind of enforcement. Now, I think page 33 of the presentation by Home Affairs talks about the authority of the commissioner. I haven't seen what powers left in the commissioner. For instance, the power to search and seize and arrest, etc., the way it is presented, seems to rest in an officer. Now, other than the commissioner with the CEO, I think the commissioner must have the authority, a particular amount of authority and a particular amount of power so that things can be done expeditiously at that level. Even if it means he or she delegates that power so that things are done on this spot. And the commissioner is appointed by the president. I have no problem with that. But to whom does he or she report? The political principal, the Minister of Home Affairs.
Well, regarding the term of office, for me, it would have been better if the person is appointed for once, for a period of 7 years, as non-renewable.
Given the nature of things that will happen here, in terms of the country, the person must come once and go. But they must just get intense training in their first year.
Now, our country has signed in 2005 in the protocol on the facilitation of the movement of persons within SADC, and I happen to be deployed in that area for SADC PF with Botswana and all of those countries. Now, there's going to be a free movement of goods and persons and other things. And it's in this area where contraband and other things do happen. What is our, how are we going to tighten security around this one?
But we also have signed a joint bilateral commission with countries like Botswana, Lesotho, Namibia, Mozambique, Swaziland and others for the same purpose. Now, we may need to tighten things, and or whether we are going to engage the Department of International Relations with a view to reviewing some of these protocols, because then we need to engage with these countries to make certain amendments to these protocols. For instance, Chair, last year, the 25th AU Summit in June 2015, which was held here in South Africa, in Johannesburg, adopted a declaration that committed to a free movement of people, goods and services in the whole continent by 2018. Are we taking that into account, the security risk that this may involve? And lastly, in the same year, 2015, 26 countries in Egypt signed the tripartite free trade area, which is good for trade within and among African states. It involves about 600 million people, and as we are aware, South Africa is fetching
That led up to this year, 740 billion worth of trade within Africa. This is a bigger trading block. Now, the five regions of the African continent have tried this tripartite free trade area. It's very necessary and good for trade. But from a security point of view, because South Africa is the more viable economy in the continent, there are more people moving towards South Africa because of civil strife and other things within the African continent from the north to the south, as economic refugees, some I think political refugees, etc., etc.
So there's going to be a need to also have an engagement and tighten up a few things around this area. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Comrade Yunus.
Thank you, Chair. Unfortunately, I have to leave, Chair, because I've got another meeting that I'm supposed to have to prepare. I'm not sure whether this is relevant right now, so you can decide on it. But essentially, I also fully agree with you about the process issue. I just want to say that. I did discuss with you yesterday that I don't think our committee will discuss this tomorrow. We'll be able to be as often as we'd like to. Best what we could do is maybe choose two members to come and attend. So I might get another chance. But I entirely agree with you that actually with this bill having been in germination for 7 years, it is quite disappointing, to put it mildly, that at this stage, particularly between Treasury and DHA, there isn't a reasonable measure of difference. There will always be difference because there are specific perspectives to have. Like what committee will have a different perspective overall from our committee because our concerns are slightly different. One accepts that. And there are legions of examples in the established democracies of these differences of turf battles and tussles. That's what makes democracy vibrant. You know, I was thinking about it, Chairperson. One day I was at the airport, one of the endless parliamentary visits we used to do in those days. And I had no book to read. And I had to pick up Stephanopoulos' book on Bill Clinton's first 4 years as president. I was stunned, actually, about how even in the presidency in the U.S., one division will not work with another. So we're not casting any aspersions on any of the officials here. But the other thing is one governed party, what others might want to say, not withstanding the August 3 election results, and we are one government. And we get this thing repeatedly. For what it's worth, Chairperson, what you are saying is very consistent with the five committees I've served in. We have actually, as some of you might know, returned the bills. And you said, hey, don't give us your problems. You must sort it out. You've had 7 years to do it. Come with a relatively consensus position. You'll never have a full consensus. We'll sort the issues out. But secondly, nothing stops this Parliament, as you well know, Chairperson and others, of actually saying to them that actually we want to overhaul your proposal. The Cabinet may have come to a decision, but Parliament ultimately has the power. But I must say, really, the departments bring on themselves. There's an ultimate ministers that are accountable. And Comrade Chair, there may be a situation, they've done this before, where the ministers themselves will be all here, because they dump their problems on parties that do not have, I don't know what support services you have, Chairperson, but I can tell you we have a new, wonderfully hard-working Ms. Manimela there, but she's new. She can't match Fuzile and Momo and so on. So don't burden us with your problems. We don't have to sort it out. I think the person you should, may I suggest, by name, you should be tough on them. They must sort this thing out, and we'll sort it out for them. And if need be, you should speak to your chair. I'll speak to our minister if you let me. Well, I can do it anyway. And tell him, may sort this thing out with Minister Kikava. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and I may have said it softer, but I really called upon them to actually deal with this thing.
I'm not caring, so you have to be soft. Okay?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Firstly, I think a lot of heart and good work has gone into this. These presentations, they have engaged, coming from BOCC about 3-4 years ago, I think a lot has been done and a lot of good work has been done. But I think before we say anything, we've got to realize that this is a policy matter. And policy matters that do not reside with us, they reside with cabinet. So for us, the issue is oversight, and then maybe to see what exactly, how optimally what the government does to execute can be done. For instance, I want to ask the national treasury, how does it distinguish customs that are collected at the ports of entry from other forms of taxes like traffic fines, car licenses, revenue terms, indirect tax on liquor, and now it's come to sweet drinks, that is indirect tax as well, and between that and the tax now that is going to be collected on an agency basis at the borders. So now we're having an agent, and then the issue, how do we distinguish? Why don't we trust this agent against a shop owner or a body store owner who collects his tax on a VAT basis and then on an indirect taxation basis? Customs are one of the indirect taxes that come to count. I just want to clarify. Secondly, the issue of looking, here we are dealing with capacities and resources. Police have got the resource, they've got the specific capacity. Revenue, the same applies to revenue and so forth. Can't then we sit together and then devise a model, management model of this institution and say, these capacities, this is the way we are going to supply these capacities in this management model, because the policy is that there should be a single command and control that is accountable. So now these three go together: accountability, command, control, one single body. So that is the mandate, and then perhaps police have started clarifying that they have let us see and have differences in actual scenarios. This is a good beginning. And the department as well has come and said, let us have a phase E. That is a good way of managing this complex situation. And I'm sure that given the skills that are in our department, we can do this and accomplish what we need to hear from the government. Is what time range are we having? What is the end stage we are looking for and where? And then once we have that, I think then we can be in a situation where we can say border is managed by a single accountable and planning, managing authority. And then we hope that then after getting that model, we are going to see better performance. The skills are there, but it's how then transfer them into this new model. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and I think I have your hand.
Yes. Great, thank you. Just a comment with regards to the police side of things, that of course we understand that, like, for example, when Metro Police and police came about, the relationship was almost an us versus them. You know, and to create an integration when there's already a separation is a bit of a hot potato. Now, in this instance, we're going to have pre-existing issues, like, let's say, for instance, illegal immigrants already within the country. Now, I would take it that because that's already a crime, it falls under South African Police Services. But now, in terms of handing over, and this is why I've also Metro Police, often from the South African Police Service side, there's a lack of cooperation, and that's, you know, from a Metro Police side, handing the suspect over to SAPS required a whole lot of extra administration than had they just been able to arrest themselves. And so what would happen is they just let the perpetrator go. Now, in this instance here, you've got a pre-existing crime whereby someone's already an illegal immigrant, and now you've got to police the situation. If you're going to hand over to the BMA, or the BMA going to control from the Department of Home Affairs, the Rondella, where's the clarity on that, and how's that going to be specified within the bill to regulate such a relationship? Second to that is also just mindful, I agree with my colleague in terms of you know, the handover period, that there's all a bit of stabilisation in case you reach a point of no return, and it's too hard to get back what you've already let go of. So somewhere along the line there has to be an incubation period, or we have to look at how these assets are handed over in a way in which we know that once we've handed it over, there is no need to have to go back, because the worst thing that can happen at this place is through already porous borders is now having a situation where you actually have no authority, no enforcement, and then there's to go back would just take too much cost, too much effort, and too much time.
Thank you very much. One anticipated that with this kind of abuse that involves taking over responsibilities from others and having transfers of infrastructure and blah blah blah, then there will be a transitional period, and it may be in a phased-in implementation. It can't be that one day you wake up and the next day then you've got your fully fledged BMA. I don't think that is the anticipation. And I think we will get into those things, and then they'll verify all those sorts of things. And Tobias.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to limit myself to the issues of process. I'm tempted to engage in the scripts of the legislation and the different relationships that different government departments need to play. But let me make this anecdote before following Comrade Dawn. I just want to remind those who used to chair donkey years ago when we proposed the importance of thinking the work of parliamentary committees and government departments. Sitting today in the sitting, I believe, are breaking even. So it's not going to be as easy as we thought it will be. It's part of the breaking even process where we take away the tails and bring it into one melting pot and make it work. So we shouldn't be dramatic about it. So we'll achieve it, I think, in our lifetime. Let me go to the issues. One, having listened to different speakers, I'm interested to know whether the Department of Defense and DICO has been involved in the discussions, because they are affected in one way or the other in the process. I know it will be very, for the DG of Home Affairs, it will be like a lot of work, because there need to be more meetings that need to be held. You see, there's an FTA that has been signed with ECOWAS and EACA countries in terms of goods and services. So this legislation is going to affect the Korean one or the other. So I believe we need to have a meeting with them. Secondly, we need a report, the NECLEC report, to look at the type of decisions we've taken. I'm interested to know whether you considered the Davis Committee report with the recommendations that's going to affect our customs in relation to tax matters. And also, can the security cluster give a report, not in the form of one department, but as a cluster, so that we can consider as we look at the legislation that report in the next meeting. And I want to make a specific, when I relate to the security cluster, I want to make a specific recommendation. I know there was a decision taken about the usage of the frigates in South African waters. So we'll be interested to know if such an issue will reflect in this report. And then also we need a report about public consultation. At least we find this coming back, because there's certain issues that has been raised. Can we also get a report there? That will also reflect the data and the engagements that took place. I hope I didn't disappoint you by always speaking to process, because I will want to engage thoroughly on the issues when we come to the next configuration.
Yeah. Honorable members. Yeah. Now, order the financials. You know, as I've been listening to what I wanted as points of clarity, I think there have been one or two or three of them. The rest were packages, really, for the DG of Home Affairs, and National Treasury and the staffs and probably other DGs and the other departments to actually go and look at these things, collaborate, talk about them, and then and come back here with some sort of progress. That's more or less what I've heard, and I'm not sure whether there is really anything to respond to clarify, other than just one or two things that I've heard. The 9,000, I think that was the point of clarity that I really had. And there may be one or two others as well that can be. But the rest is almost packages to say, have you considered this? Are you going to send them so that I can go and get the information and whatever and collaborate? But the biggest thing that we are saying is go and talk to each other. And then ensure that you understand these things, all of you, you understand. Then what you have been fearing of, make proposals among yourself to actually accommodate each other. But the rule of thumb is that when you go to a negotiation, if you get stuck to your position, you're not going to agree on anything. Then you are actually entering into that particular room to negotiate under false pretenses. You gotta free yourself, be objective, go in there, know the fact of the things that you are worried about here, but open your mind, go in there and make sure that you talk these things, you propose certain provisions that can accommodate, and make sure that you have some sort of a sense on many of these things. And assist us so that we don't really come here and find ourselves doing the job that you, like as UNICEF have said, is that you guys, you have got a lot of technical support and human resources support that can produce drafts and all these sorts of things for you to be able to agree on certain things, research and the rest. And you are better placed to actually bring to us something that is more or less finished so that we come and pick and then and also finish that last bit that we have to finish. And I think DG, you want to lead on anything that needs clarity, then it will be followed by treasury and staff if there is anything. Thanks.
Chair and the honourable members. Chair, my understanding is that in government there is a hierarchy. The hierarchy in government says is the minister who takes this and says this is how we're going to be dealing with this. Chair, I don't have a doubt. Cabinet took a decision on the matter. And based on that cabinet decision, we prepared a bill. I don't have a right as a DG of Home Affairs to come here and say something else. So, I think the point was the one which I think we will go back. The Minister of Finance, the Minister of Police, the Minister of Home Affairs must say we disagree with what Cabinet agreed to. And then we come back to the committee. But where I sit here, my mandate to come here is based, no bill comes and be presented here without the express cabinet approval on it. So, Chair, what we're saying here that the DMA must be established in this manner, in this manner, is based on a cabinet decision. So what the proposal I'm taking is the one it says, let's go back to the minister and say, Minister, this is what you gave as a mandate. But it seems as if at an administrative level, we're not speaking on one voice. So let's go back to this. So, Chair, when we come on the 13th, that's all I'm going to bring in. Ministers has given us a political direction and then come to the committee and not confused based on that. Chair, the only comment I wanted to make was true. Chair, as we speak, we're not establishing a border management agency on nothing. Like now, there are no borders in South Africa. There's nothing was starting from afresh. Chair, the problems are there. And as these departments, they are there. If what we're talking about here as this department and this department is working, we should not be here. When a member is saying there is a coordination, if that coordination has been working, Chair, why would we be here? We'll be sitting and saying, we're collecting revenue, we're protecting this, there are no problems. But the reason why you are here is because problems are existing, Chair. So I want the community not to think that I'm coming here to say, put us a clean, we're doing all these things, we're starting a new thing. Let's come to what the mayor was talking about in terms of the cost of running the border. Just the existing land, that's why they're porous. It's because there's no concentrated effort to say, what must we do with our borders? Chair, I think there are figures which we'll talk about. Chair, what are we losing as South Africa on illicit mining? So if I'm going to sit and say, no, we must not do anything because this thing is costly. Chair, rhinos, we were in a workshop to say by 2010, this was the number of rhinos in this country. But what the number up do we have? So, Chair, are we going to continue and say, let's leave everything, let's not do anything, and Chair, this matter, which I was happy with the honorable member there, this is about territorial, Chair. I can tell you, if tomorrow the bill can be given to success, they will say, Home Affairs is going to come and say, it's good to establish a PMA as long as Home Affairs is not there. If tomorrow we give it to SARS, SARS is going to say, yes sir, it's good to come up with a PMA, then Home Affairs and Police and say, as long as we're not there. So a decision has been taken by Cabinet to say, this thing must be established. And when they take that decision, it's in the bill. It says in the document that the PMA must deal with immigration, must deal with border policy, must deal with the borderline. It's a decision of the government. So it's there, Chair. So that's why this whole thing it is. That's how with regard to NETLAG, Chair, the way we understood the process of NETLAG, we go to NETLAG, we negotiated everything. These are the points of disagreement which are in the report of NETLAG. Then it says that it can only be there. Parliament now which must deal with those issues. We can't go back to whoever triggers NETLAG. But these are the areas of disagreement. 1, 2, 3. We've put our position, which is in the report, to say how we, as a government, we said we'll resolve those issues. Then, according to that process, so we need to bring it. So, as a department, we can't go back now to the NETLAG and say, this is what we need to do, because that's what is the report. So, share with others, as you said, we will bring it back, but what I think is the key one is to say the policy direction has been given by the cabinet, and we are here to present that on the 13th. If we need to come back with another to say, Parliament, this is the decision of the cabinet. This is the respect. Thanks.
Yeah, DG, up to now, there is no question on that cabinet decision. The issues that we are saying is certain provisions in the bill that the others are still holding on them. Then you say, discuss with them. They must come and then if you have the discussion, if you can accommodate each other, then you accommodate each other on those specific provisions to take care of certain issues. But if you fail, you will have failed and then you will have passed your failure to us. Then we'll have then to actually process the thing and take decisions on your behalf. But we are encouraging you, yourselves from SARS, this thing of customs and whatever. What is that you can work out to just provide a clause that deals with that? And how is it going to... But the question of actually establishing the DMA, I don't think that is a questionable thing up to now, because it's based on a decision that has been taken and the president has actually pronounced that particular process since back in 2009. That's why we are not understanding why this discussion interdepartmental has taken so long.
That's why we are not really understanding that. And that's why now the UNICEF is actually even saying that it is that particular devil. But we are saying, open your mind, be objective about looking at this thing. It has been silent. We want to implement it, but assist us that we put provisions that will make this particular piece of legislation the best legislation we can have. Don't stay behind and say, let them go, and when we eventually pass it, then say, yeah, but they have not done X, Y, Z. Whereas we have got an opportunity to actually assist in putting together something that is reasonable to the best of our knowledge, with the best technical support that we have from the department. Mr. Treasurer, if we would avoid the discussions, only when there is a point of clarity, then they just raise that, just simply clarify that point. At other points that have been raised, majority of them were just discussions, which we can do it on the same.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. And just to confirm what DJ Benny said, I mean, I think there's agreement certainly from the Treasury on the establishment of the entity and giving effect to their cabinet decision, and that we do want the bill to be considered and go through Parliament. I think the issue that we raised was, and I know, and certainly I was hoping the argument would be clear. It's not a turf issue. Don't include SARS because it's us. The issue is customs administration is a particular speciality. And to answer the question that I was asked, if you look at this particular slide, it did deal with, you know, when goods come in. And I'm talking containers, not maybe, you know, when you pass your luggage through or a time when you come through. That's accompanied luggage is different. But this is container luggage. So containers that come through. What's the nature of the goods? The correct set of classification. Type of goods. How you get the correct value, the origin of the goods. If you look at a GTC report, for example, it makes the point that this functional organization extends beyond collection and covers other corresponding functional categories such as the control of goods at ports of entry, regulations and rulings, lack of keeping and returns, orders and investigation, dispute settlements, internal investigations, as well as functions performed by the tax ombud. The BMA should not have to recreate a revenue collection infrastructure that has been already been painstakingly created by SARS. So it's not a turf issue. Certainly, I think that would be a pathetic reason, I think, to even put forward. It's just the issue that you don't want to create risk. And I think what we've said, and where the difference is with traffic clients and so on, we've shown this could be 20 or 30% of your revenue. You can't deal with the administration. Certainly, there are other departments that collect fines. If you go for your passport, you pay to Home Affairs, etc. They do collect revenue. We're talking of significant revenue collection, and that is a speciality. And I think the key point we're saying is that the bill is a framework. It's important that it doesn't generate uncertainty for an important institution like SARS. That what it must do is to spell out exactly what's going to happen. That's exactly the detail we're talking, and certainly our political principles we're hoping will come together and endorse the approach. I mean, certainly even today, and I'm coming and representing the views of my political principle because there's a concern. So I hope that answers the question very briefly, but we can deal with the detail of this. Because I think the key issue we're saying is, what problem are we trying to fix? Is there a problem with our cargo or container coming in? Remember, it impacts on industrial policy, the DTI is involved, etc. If there is a problem, let's look at how best to solve it. Creating, frankly, one thing I learned after 1994 is having the law to say, thou shalt do this, doesn't actually solve the problem. And that applies to all legislation, it's not just this. It's that legislation and so on, good intentions won't solve the problem. We've got to talk about the nitty-gritties and figure out how we deal with the weaknesses. And I think that's the kind of discussion that, frankly, even the Treasury move away from the 1,000 Home Affairs to sit on those integrity. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, I think those nitty-gritties you're talking about, that's what you must go and discuss. You see, you must go and discuss those things. And make sure that the other party understands your view, so that when they respond being informed. And then you will quickly get a consensus on how to make provisions for that particular aspect on the bill. And then, of course, is that sometimes you must not lock yourself down on issues that belong to regulations. Because there are certain things that will belong to the regulatory framework on the bill. But I mean, dealing about a policy matter that can provide the framework, how this thing is established and what it's supposed to do. But then there will be regulations that will be promulgated. That will actually clarify exactly how a particular aspect is going to be undertaken and dealt with. But I mean, if we need clarity, engage each other, and then that will assist us. Please.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honorable Chair, I agree with most of what the Director General of Home Affairs has said. Going back to drawing board, finding out areas that are sticking out and coming back to the committee or committees. We, as APS is a paramilitary establishment, we work on discipline and we respect hierarchy and we respect political leadership and we take political guidance from our superiors. This is how we work. So we've got no difficulty in following any political directive given to us. In that regard, I want to talk about the question of the three scenarios that were mentioned here. Those were the internal processes and internal discussions within the SAPS, not with Home Affairs. Within the SAPS, trying to assist the process, because those discussions took place even prior to the deal being placed. We were trying to help in such a manner that we look at possible situations, how can we ensure that the decision of the cabinet is implemented. So those were the discussions that took place. It's not something that we are presenting now before the committee. When the law is enacted, we shall follow the law. Secondly, the question of the last part that was mentioned by the SAPS speaker about SAPS willing to accommodate PMA. I think that was, we are not having a position as a department that says we shall support the bill provided SAPS leads. We were looking at the constitutional imperatives and seeing with the current constitution where it says in terms of law enforcement there should be one police service. Maybe with the current police service that we have, we can be able to accommodate an operationalized PMA as an agency, either the Minister of Police like I did or under the police service. But that was just an input from the CPS. Because as one of the speakers mentioned that it is a question about metro police or traffic police, that they should be under one umbrella. So we're looking at those things, whether or not a constitutional amendment may be required to create an additional law enforcement vehicle. Because we are talking about armed law enforcement. Now, armed law enforcement, you may create it under the Defense Act or under the Police Act or under which other act, then you might have to change the constitution. So we were looking at those areas of using the currently available law enforcement vehicle to accommodate and operationalize the PMA. Not to say profit that it belongs to SAF, therefore it will not happen. So that is not our position. And we want to support the position mentioned by the DG. We shall be complying and we fully participate in all the activities. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, thank you very much. And that's why I said after you said that, I've indicated that no, we're dealing with a cabinet decision. And they want to inform them why they decided on Home Affairs. We are not having any knowledge of that. But we believe that they have applied their right. We believe until somebody says they have not done so. The honorable members, I think we have done a lot today. And you may have some time to speak.
Thank you, Chair. I asked a number of questions of clarification which haven't been asked. The first is the question of intelligence. I wonder if we could clarify exactly how the intelligence services will be integrated into the BMA, because the last thing we want to wake up to is the BMA rogue unit in 5 or 6 years' time. So that's the first question. The second question is the 9,000 personnel and the breakdown of those numbers, because they appear to me to be untrue or inaccurate. And the third is whether there's been any anticipation of the acquisition priorities which would flow from the BNA and the cost implications thereof.
Chair, maybe just to come
yeah.
in. I thought some of the things that you were saying, officials are picking up. There will be a time where we come together and they'll be able to respond on some of those. I hope they have noted everything. And, I mean, all of us have raised our concerns. And we think it's work in progress. Once we come together in this manner, they will be able to look at some of the things that we raised and then be able to respond. So I want to propose, Chair, that some of the issues that we raised should be seen as work in progress. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And probably that's what I believed. I tried to make the point to say many of these looks like it's a package for them to go with, because I mean the breakdown of the 9,000, then all of a sudden, then the procurement, and of course that is the presentation. Maybe DG can talk about intelligence. I thought that you have actually spoken about that on the presentation. Just reiterate only that one point.
No, thanks. No, we did talk about it. If the honourable member remember, I said there will be paradigm shift on the targeting centre. The Roman said we establishment of a national border risk management and targeting centre. And I even said that will help now for the BMP, that is the intelligence. Yeah. Even the 9,000 have got the numbers. The numbers was that as SAPS, remember this was the static dial at that time. SAPS was 5,500 at that time. Then the DHA 1,400, SARS 1,400, DAF 300, Department of Health 200 gives us 8,800. But the numbers of the Board of Defense were not included, as we said that, because defense of that issue was what we said. So those are the numbers.
Yeah, I think as from the 13th of September, then we'll throw quite a lot of questions, and then they will be prepared to actually deal with those specific questions. Members should remember that today, as we have actually asked them, it was that they just come and present the bill to us. Then we go home with it, and then we process it, and when we come, we throw all sorts of questions left and right, and then those that we have got answered, then respond, so that then we are able to take this forward. I think on that score, honorable members and our guests that are here, the officials, I really want to thank the Department of Home Affairs, the National Treasury, as well as staffs for having briefed us on this important piece of legislation. And we hope that they will continue to assist us moving forward in processing this piece of legislation. But we want to repeat those points that needs to be hammered out. Please find space among yourselves as administrators and then they can involve you for your and so that when you come back on the 13th, at least there might be some sort of way forward and progress on some of the things to enhance this piece of legislation. And I wanted to thank all honorable members from all different portfolio committees that have actually graced this meeting. I'm sure all of us now we are empowered, we should be able to engage in discussions outside of this committee meeting so that we prepare for the 13th moving forward. And when we receive the submissions by the end of the 8th of September, we'll try and make sure that all members that are here do receive those specific copies some reasonable days before the actual date of the meeting, so that we are able to process them, have some sort of positions, prepare so that you can present your positions properly in the committee. And like as I've said, is our intention, because of the bill is cutting across many portfolio committees, would have loved participation of all those committees. But the intention is not to scuttle your own work. And then only if you've got any particular opportunity of setting one member to come and attend from them, then we really appreciate that, because we'll go back with a package of some of the documents and so that you can make a meaningful input in our work in processing this particular meeting. Thank you very much, and this meeting stands adjourned.